Mike, spring is upon us. It's finally April, and you know what that means.
National Park Week is here. Every April, the outdoors community celebrates National Park Week. And if you're making your way to some national parks this spring, then be sure to pack a moon travel guide with you.
We all know how time-consuming it is to research everything involved with planning a trip to a national park, from hiking trails to permits to campsites to accommodation. There's so much involved.
Don't spend months endlessly searching, trying to build the perfect trip, when you can do it all with Moon Travel Guides.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical and sustainable travel. They are committed to the national parks and ensure that all of their guides are up to date with the most recent and most helpful information for travelers.
And if you find yourself headed to Wyoming, then be sure to include the newest, most updated edition of the Moon Travel Guide to Yellowstone and Grand Teton, Hiking, Camping, and Wildlife. In this guide, outdoor expert Becky Lomax takes you through everything you need to see, know, and understand about these two neighboring parks.
From trip planning, the best spot and times for geyser sightings, food recommendations, lodging, the best trail information for hiking trails, updated maps. This Moon Travel Guide to Yellowstone and Grand Teton has you covered.
For more information and to purchase the Moon Travel Guide to Yellowstone and Grand Teton, be sure to visit moon.com.
Let your heart be your compass. Let Moon be your guide.
Human-made structures that are a part of a natural park setting or a national park setting. And I'm not talking like swing sets. Like, I'm not talking about actual like parks where kids play or whatnot. I'm talking about like a national park. Structures that are left over or things that are left over that the park has sort of decided to preserve or essentially let decay in its own way.
Well, I also think there is a line to be drawn between like, this was created by indigenous people.
Mm-hmm.
These are made structures by indigenous people, and then human made structures by white settler people as part of colonization. Obviously, there are some fascinating human made structures. Like, I'm thinking about the ones in Petrified Forest National Park.
Mm-hmm. Like the Agate House.
The Agate House made out of petrified wood.
Yeah, wild.
Fascinating stuff. But then there's sort of like the other side of it, which is we just experienced some of this in Death Valley. There was like this castle in Death Valley that's like not
that we couldn't
finished
go to.
That
yeah.
you could go to and
well,
see
not right
the
now.
Outside of if you wanted to. Not right now, no. But like there's a, you know.
Scotty's Castle.
But yeah, and that's like, you know, a wealthy person had a home and the space and they built it. And, you know, when it comes to natural spaces, sometimes that's the thing.
Yeah, I think it's part and parcel. It also has to deal with like inholdings. And like when we talked about Shenandoah, there was a lot with Shenandoah that was like eminent domain where houses were basically or homes were made a part of the park. And then basically, essentially what was going to happen was as soon as those people died, they were able to live out their time in that space. But then like the park would absorb that property.
Right.
There are park spaces, or if you even think about in Capitol Reef, like the Mormon orchards and the things like that, that have been like preserved. I do think that there's like a part of it is the history of that space. And a lot of it is most likely probably prior to it becoming a national park space.
And so sometimes it's just, it is like that space is connected to people who ended up being instrumental for, you know, having the park be preserved. There was quite a bit of this in Guadalupe Mountains National Park. There was like the like a couple of different homesteads that are preserved. I mean, in one way, it does preserve the kind of story of the space and sort of what happened in that space. And I think generally speaking, all of this can be done in a way that sort of is very transparent of history and like what that looked like. And there are some spaces that do that better than others. We bring this up only because in Guadalupe Mountains National Park, there were a few of these. What I did appreciate about the interpretive information in Guadalupe Mountains National Park, it didn't seem like the park is preserved in order to preserve these like human-made like homestead structures.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like people-made homestead structures or like celebrating these people-made homestead structures.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like these are here. This is, you know, their context for sort of where they are. They are a part of this park's story. But there are certainly other parks where, like, the interpretive signage has a lot to be desired when it comes to, like, let's just celebrate, you know, white settler folks who were here and built this. Isn't it so cool? I mean, I feel like sometimes there's that kind of interpretive signage.
Sure. But there's also parks that are specifically based off of structures that exist. I'm thinking of Gateway Arch. I'm thinking of Hot Springs. Like, that, a lot of that is, like, historical, you know.
Though I would argue that, like, Hot Springs actually has the geothermal thing happening down below the earth.
It does, but we're not seeing that really all the time. The baths are sort of your inroads into that.
Like, sure.
Yes. Yeah.
Sure.
So I think it just depends.
Oh, it totally just depends. It just depends. And it's, I think something that's, you know, worth taking in as far as, you know, the greater story, but also knowing that it's not necessarily the center of the story.
Looking for adventure, I want to follow on the trail, or get a little lost and let the wind fill my sails. Get up when the stars still fill the sky, don't wake the sun. There's so much to be done, and the day has just begun. Go where the postcards are real, you can feel, you can open your eyes and open your heart when you gaze at the national park.
Follow you, I'll follow you there.
At the national park.
Follow you, I'll follow you there.
At the national park.
Follow you, I'll follow you there.
Follow you, I'll follow you there.
We would like to acknowledge that while visiting the land also known as Guadalupe Mountains National Park, that we were on the traditional and stolen land of the Mescalero Apache and the Lipan Apache people.
Last we left off, we had just hiked Devil's Hall, which is a highly recommended hike, which if you make your way to Guadalupe Mountains National Park, which you should, please hike Devil's Hall. It's, you know, Guadalupe Peak is amazing, but I think Devil's Hall is probably my favorite hike of our time in Guadalupe Mountains National Park.
I agree. Devil's Hall was a very, very special hike and something that I would immediately do again upon return to Guadalupe Mountains National Park.
So listen to episode 136 to hear all about that. But after hiking this trail, we trekked our way back out past the turnoff for Guadalupe Peak, went back to the parking lot where we were currently parked at the Pine Springs campground, which is just a hop, step, and a jump from the Pine Springs Visitor Center. We de-gear and we rest for a little bit. This was, for the most part, a flat, quote-unquote, trail. It had some elevation. There was some scrambling stuff. There was a lot to do here. It was an active flat trail, if anything.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And our next plan was to go do the McKittrick Canyon Trail, which was in a different part of the park, and that required us to drive out of the Pine Springs area and over to a different parking lot. We get in the car and we head out, and the first stop we make is the Pine Springs Visitor Center. We do this for restrooms, for water, and then we also got to meet some ranger friends there.
Yeah, it was great.
We learned from them about the point hike that we have a trail mix on now, which was that really incredible hike done by some paraplegic hikers in specially made wheelchairs
In
the 1980s to get to the top of Guadalupe Peak.
We leave this area and we eat lunch in the car and then drive east on the main road for about a mile and then make the turnoff into this area of the park. Now, something that we knew about McKittrick Canyon was that the gate for this area was going to close at a specific time. Like, this was not an area of the park that was open the whole time. Like, you couldn't access McKittrick Canyon all day, every day. It was like you had, like, it was almost like a 9-to-5 window, I feel like. So it was a specific amount of times. We were a little like, we're going to have to be very cognizant of that as we're hiking, because we need to be able to get out before the gate is locked. Because they're like, if the gate's locked, don't try to drive around it. Call the ranger, someone will come, but you might have to wait a while.
We pull in and we park. You had to run to the restroom pretty immediately. Becky and I just like waited in the car, and then you returned and like
listening
then,
to River.
Right. And then we started to get ready. But I remember I was so tired at this point, and I was so unenthusiastic about doing another trail because we had just done Guadalupe Peak, the Manzanita Spring. The following day, we did all of Carlsbad. Then we're back, and we had just done this, and I was exhausted.
Yeah.
I got out, and I remember looking at you and just going like, I really just wanted to sit in the car for a little longer.
I was like, too bad. We have a time frame here. Yep. Let's go.
So.
Yeah.
Yep. We gear up and we set off. We go past the bathroom building and quickly we find the trailhead, and because mostly it is the only one that is here.
The McKittrick Canyon Trail can be up to 7-ish miles one way, but we weren't going to necessarily go that far. There were options for us. So we could take the trail and hike to one endpoint, or we could shorten where our endpoint was and still see something that was very, very interesting. We had choices, which was great. I think this was a day where we needed choices at the end of the hiking day.
We begin the trail and it is immediately decline, which was nice. And to the right, there's a giant big wash, which is very common and found often in Guadalupe Mountains.
Yeah.
Is washes.
Washes.
And also trails near washes.
Yeah.
We're going down and down and down, and it feels like we're like just declining, about to head down into the wash, but then the trail picks up and we head up again, incline. Yeah. And it's like this for a while.
As we hike, we see a stone table, which was sort of just like in the middle of the trail. It was very odd. This was also kind of ominous looking sky, you know, a lot of up and down sections here. And as we kind of looked, there wasn't rain in the schedule this day, but it definitely was a darker sky when we started this trail. And it was a little like, ooh, are we going to get like soaked as we're hiking?
And also, you definitely don't want to be hiking in a wash if it's raining.
No.
Because all of the water is going to go right there. Mm-hmm. Even if it's like lightly raining, it's still a good idea to get out of there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I thought it was kind of perfect, mostly because like overcast is like great for photography. Mm-hmm. So I did have my camera with me trying to photograph birds. The temperature was great too. Everything was just like slightly creepy. It was wonderful. Yeah, I was into it.
This is where we saw, where Becky pointed out some manzanita trees too for the first time. And that's where Manzanita was born.
That's true. That's true. There were plenty on this trail. Mm-hmm. So as we hike, the trail is continuing to wind down and up the wash to the left. And then we finally get to the spot where we are going to cross the wash for the first time. This is a very wide wash. Lots of rock. And by rock, I mean, it felt more like gravelly rock, not like big rock. We make it to the other side of the wash and then the trail sort of picks up from there.
As we hike, we see a family. There definitely was like a mom and dad and a bunch of kids that were like having a blast on the trail. They were like running. These folks were kind of ahead of us as we were hiking, but then we swiftly kind of caught up because it was a little bit like herding cats with kids.
The trail on the other side of this wash heads up, and then it's sort of like we're on a little bit of like a flat kind of ridge.
Yeah.
Like that's
overlooking the wash to the right.
Wash is now to our left. We're continuing on and there's some taller grasses here. There's some occasional wildflowers. It is the beginning of spring, so we were starting to get a little bit of that, but not many, and they're small.
As we continue on, we see some other hikers on the way, but it's only a handful here. The lot, when we pulled up and parked, had a decent amount of cars in it, so we were kind of getting more hikers here because it's also later in the day than we were when we were in Devil's Hall, where we were the first ones essentially on the trail and pretty much alone for most of the trail.
So up to this point, it's been mostly just any amount of incline has been short little bursts of incline, maybe like a couple of grunts, but nothing too bad. And then we find ourselves at a small river crossing.
And with that, let's take our first break.
Hey y'all, it's Dusty and Mike with exciting news.
That's right, it's our episode finder. It's all about making finding our episodes even easier.
Want to find more episodes about hikes in Shenandoah? With over 10 episodes across two separate seasons, it would have involved a lot of scrolling and searching.
Now, with our episode finder, you can find all those episodes with a few easy clicks. That way, finding an episode on Yosemite from season 1 is just as easy as finding an episode on Zion, Yellowstone, and Haleakala. all in separate seasons.
With over 275 episodes in 35 different national parks, our episode finder will add ease when finding out more about hikes in these spaces.
But it's not just about hikes by national park. We've categorized our entire library so you can find hikes by state, hikes by terrain, and hikes by difficulty.
And all of our Trail Mix episodes are there too, so you can easily find our science-based episodes, interviews, and more.
Planning a trip to Colorado and want to hear more about our adventures there? Want to grunt it out on some really tricky trails or learn more about glaciers, grasslands, and mountains?
Just click the link in our show notes or on our Instagram bio and it pops right up. You can also head directly to our website and look for the episode finder at the top of the navigation bar.
Conquer one hike in one national park, one park at a time, with just a few clicks with our episode finder. Happy trails!
Looking for some new art inspired by the national parks? Then be sure to check out our online store, The Gaze Shop.
This season, as we explore the landscapes of Olympic National Park, Mount Rainier National Park, Carlsbad Cavern National Park, and Guadalupe Mountains National Park, we've got some new items and designs coming your way.
Introducing our Olympic National Park and Mount Rainier National Park posters. These 12 by 18 posters make a great addition to any home or office, or a great gift for any lover of the national parks, even if that national parks lover is you.
Whether it's art for your wall or a sticker for your water bottle, you're sure to find something that sparks your love of the outdoors. Visit shop.gazeatthenationalparks.com to bring some of the national parks home with you.
Okay, so we're playing Death Omens.
Ooh.
That's right. We have to thank our friend Jeff, who is a park ranger. He told us a story that made us create this game, because he told us a story about being very tired and getting to a spot on a trail where he didn't have enough food and thought oh my God, I'm not prepared. I have to turn around. And then this white mule showed up on the other side of a hill. He was like, this is my death symbol, a white mule showing up on the other side of a hill on a trail. And we were like, oh my God, what a great game that would be. What does the scenario look like when you, if you were to die, what would happen that would symbolize to you that you were going to die?
Mm.
That's the moment for you. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we both have come up with ours, and then I think we should pick somebody and come up with theirs.
Oh, okay.
So why don't you share yours, Mike?
I don't remember mine.
Really?
What did I say?
I
don't think I ever actually gave an answer because I was flummoxed.
Okay, well, I'm going to give mine and give you some time to think.
Great.
We kind of dig this idea of a white animal or a white something, right? White is a kind of theme. And I kind of love that it's white instead of black when it comes to death. I just think black and darkness is often associated with death. And I like that it's white and rebirth being associated with death in a way. But mine was, if a white raven were to perch itself onto the statue of William Shakespeare in Central Park, and I saw it, I would know immediately that my death was imminent. It's happening soon.
Yeah,
I did look this up. White ravens are extremely rare, but they do exist. They're not experiencing albinism. It's a different thing they experience that removes all the black pigment in their feathers and turns it white. White ravens do exist.
Sure. And it's also death. So death can just be white if it wants to be.
Yeah, exactly. So plenty of
indigenous people would tell you that.
Right. What is your... There it is. Yes, correct. So what was yours?
I think we said it was an owl. I think this is what we landed on. So I think it would be sort of this a la the raven. A white owl would be outside my home. It perched in a tree. Then it would somehow be in the house with me. Instead of nevermore, it would be, whoa!
Who?
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 Mm-hmm. Exactly. Some sort of shroud would then take me.
I see.
Into the next world.
I see. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it would be in a tree outside of your house, and then it would find its way inside. Mm-hmm. And that would be...
It would be the specter of death.
So I find it interesting that your home is the scene in which it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was not my home. It was,
for yours, it's NYC.
It was technically that.
Although that was the NBC.
It was, NYC.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Just died here this morning.
One bird. No. I could go on, but I'm not going to go on. Okay, great. Now I'm curious, like, should we do someone who's already passed? Like, what would have been their, like, symbol?
Sure.
Betty White.
Oh, Betty White.
What would have been Betty White's symbol?
I think it would have been a white herring.
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so a white herring.
Mm-hmm. Fired out of a cannon.
Yeah. Where was she? Like, where?
She was at the Hollywood Bowl.
Why the Hollywood Bowl?
I don't know. It just feels right.
I feel like, I don't know. I do like the white herring. I don't know. Maybe she was in Miami and it was happening in Miami, perhaps. I do love how, like, there's a very specific, I mean, Golden Girls presented a very specific version of Miami.
Mm-hmm.
That is the Miami that I know.
Mm-hmm.
No, I've never been there.
Oh, okay.
I'm expecting Miami to be just like that, that they presented in their sets that were built in LA.
Yep.
Right.
On the lanai.
On the lanai.
Mm-hmm.
We get to this river crossing. It's not a very big river. It's not that dramatic, but it is water that we do have to cross.
I would say it's more like shallow and wide.
But there are some rocks that were there, stepping stones to, you know, get across the water.
Yeah.
This is why another reason hiking poles are always such a great idea.
Absolutely.
Is because you can...
Stability.
Test the stability of the thing before you step on it, before you like...
And also the depth of the water if you're uncertain.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's right. The other thing that I was thinking about, I don't do this because frankly, I'm just sort of like, well, I don't know if that's going to be something, some sort of poisonous, you know, like plant life. You know, I don't touch plant life when we're on the trail. Becky does sometimes touch plant life, but what I noticed is that she always uses her like hiking pole first. And I'm like, oh, that's really interesting. Like, we were looking at, it was this one kind of cacti, but like, you wouldn't know that it was cacti. Mm-hmm. But then if you touched it with your hiking pole, it was like, because everything is like curved and wispy.
Mm-hmm.
But when you touched it, it was like stiff. Mm-hmm. And like, they're like, those are needles.
Yeah.
They don't look like needles.
Yeah.
Don't touch them because they'll hurt you. But that's another great thing. What is the situation with this plant? Like, you're not necessarily harming it necessarily if you're just using your hiking pole to like move something to the side.
Yeah.
Perhaps, but other good reasons to have hiking poles.
Absolutely. We were talking, I was with Becky at this point on the trail, and we were talking a lot about publishing and what she was just like, kind of like what it's like to publish a book, specifically as a travel writer. This was like a big conversation that we were having here as we were crossing this river. She was also like up against a deadline that was coming up. So she was talking to me about that and like what she still needed to do. As we get across the river, we follow the trail, which brings us deeper into the canyon.
Here's the thing about this canyon, and I say canyon with quotation marks. It is a canyon, yes. McKittrick Canyon is real. However, it feels less like a canyon with like a rim that you descend into and more just like walking along a valley floor. Because as we keep going and going, this feels less like a canyon and more just like trees on a valley floor that we're walking in and amongst. Like, it's a very clear trail between vegetation.
Right.
With like ranges on either
side. Once we essentially leave the wash, which is a big portion of this trail. So it doesn't even feel like a canyon there either.
No.
You know, it was very sort of open and washy. As we walk, we notice some very cool and beautiful manzanita trees. And these trees look like their bark. If you've never seen them, they're fascinating because their bark is actually this red, kind of smooth cut in color, although they also have what looks to be like tree bark, like actual tree bark. So it almost looks like, I think I asked Becky when we saw them for the first time, I was like, what's happening? Did the bark get stripped off of this tree? Is this what the inside of the trees actually is? And she's like, no, that's actually the bark. And it's fascinating. When we were in Pinnacles recently, we also saw some, which was cool to see them again. They almost look like musculature. These trees look like, they're not as like ribbed as like you would imagine like a muscle to look like based off of the sketch of a human body, but they have like this very structural form to them. They're just so strange, but so, so beautiful.
Their branches look like they're almost painted on. I mean, it's like if Bob Ross or a painter designed trees in a painting, they might come up with like a shape like this.
Yeah.
It's just so visually stunning. Soon the canyon begins to shift and it feels less like we're crossing in and out of and around a wash and more like this carved trail through a couple of mountain ranges in between them. We hike over a small stream again, and there is this like large flat rock ramp on the other side.
Yeah, which was interesting. It definitely had this feel of like, it just was like a slab essentially that we had to hike up and over. And this I would say is probably around like the middle point of the trail at this point. So I remember on the way back realizing where we were and being like, okay, we don't have that much further when we have to turn around to go back.
So you and Becky were hiking a little ahead of me, which is very common because I'm usually behind, one, because I hike slower, and two, because I'm always looking into birds and recording and taking photos. And I was doing this. I ended up meeting up with this other birder who was like, what is your Merlin app picking up? And I was talking to him about that. In this area, generally speaking, there were a couple of birds that were not birds that I would see normally in my neighborhood in New Jersey. He and I ended up talking about vermilion flycatchers because he had been hoping to see one, but I hadn't heard any of them or seen any of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, that would be a really stunning bird to see for sure. Haven't seen one yet. Hopefully get to at some point.
Eventually you do meet up with us and we end up coming across a very, very hefty squirrel who was extremely social. He had no qualms about people being around. I think he was looking for some little extra snacks.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, there was like a little stump and he was on the stump saying hello. Yeah. As people walked by, mm-hmm. and he's like, I know if I'm here, people will think I'm cute, mm-hmm. and give me food, mm-hmm. right? You know, I know that squirrel cognizance may not bring them to knowing if they're cute or not, but to me, it does. To me, their cognizance does. So mm-hmm. he was hefty.
Yeah.
And it was lovely. Mm-hmm. And there were some hikers there. We had to be like, do not feed him.
Right.
Don't feed him. Right. All he wants is your food. He can't, he's got to be able to survive without your food,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Did he have the big ears? Was that a squirrel with the big ears?
No, I don't think he had giant ears.
No, I'm looking at his photo now. He did not have big ears. He was perched up on a rock.
He was perched.
Perched mm-hmm. upon a rock. He was ready to make friends.
Yeah.
So we do not feed him, and then we continue on. The trail leads to, you know, like another sort of little wash or a part of the wash that, you know, is like up higher in the canyon. We have to cross it. And then a larger, tougher river rock was around that we also required us to, you know, navigate some.
The clouds just become even more dramatic right now, which will end up paying off later, especially when we're hiking back, because this is very, very ominous sky at the moment. And we're continuing to kind of like keep an eye on it. And as we continue to hike, we notice that there's a sign and that there are some folks off to the right. And this was the sign for the Pratt Cabin. Now, we thought about this as an option. Like, it was an offshoot. It wasn't included necessarily in the mileage that we thought we were going to do for McKittrick, but it wasn't a very big offshoot. And it is a cabin that is a structure that's within the park. It's like a homestead that's there. We have to kind of walk down a little bit of a lane to get to the cabin. And we decide, let's do this. It's here. We're here. That's kind of my ethos when we're in a park. It's like, I might not be back here. Let's do this. So we head off down the trail and it seems like this little like lane used to be a former driveway.
Yes. And we make it to the cabin. You're not able to go inside the cabin, or at least at this time. But there was some interpretive info and we could see into some of the windows. Like, to the left is like an actual cabin. To the right is sort of like a structure that looked like it was under construction or being finished. But there was some interpretive info. And to give you some info from that, here is what the introduction shares. The stone cabin, as Wallace Pratt called it, was built in McKittrick Canyon during the winter of 1931 and 32. Mr. Pratt had purchased much of the land that is McKittrick Canyon following a visit he made in 1930. As Mr. Pratt stated, I fell in love with it right now. Mr. Pratt's love for McKittrick Canyon became a declaration with his donation of the canyon to the American people in 1961. Today, McKittrick Canyon is part of Guadalupe Mountains National Park and is being preserved for future generations. And then it goes on to tell you about how they ended up building this home here.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an example of like this land was owned by a person and then donated to the national park system.
The cabin has like a stone roof to it too, which is
yeah.
fascinating. Like, it's a slanted stone roof. It's like very interesting construction. There is, like Dusty said, that like sort of building that is off to the right, which almost feels like it's a shed or it could have been a stable at some point. But there are some picnic tables here that you could sit at, I guess, and take lunch in if you wanted to, or just like have a minute. But there are a few other people here that are wandering around, and basically we just kind of make our way around the cabin and kind of like peer in when we can into the windows, which are all open, even though there are shutters too.
We all sort of like walk around. There's some photos of what the inside of the cabin looked like when it was, you know, a place where Wallace lived. And there was also a diagram of sort of the bird's eye view of the house to see where the kitchen was versus the bedrooms versus everything like that. So that's all there and can be seen there. It is, I think, goes into like the larger sort of bank of, you know, when private land was owned by people and then they donated it to the park. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why we have Acadia National Park, because all of that land was donated to the national park system.
Well, not all of it. Like a lot of it was piecemeal donated.
Yes, but yeah. That the park the gets way, bigger way, and bigger right. because the of the today, donations.
Because of the donations, yeah.
So we continue, and we decide we're going to head two more steps up this. And by two more steps, meaning like we're going to get to two more spots on this trail. We could go all the way to three, but coming up on the trail would be the Grotto, followed by the Notch, followed by McKittrick Ridge. McKittrick Ridge is essentially the end stopping point of this trail. That's like 7 miles out, and then you turn back around. And if you were to go all the way back to the parking lot, that would be 14 miles. So we decided we were going to go to the Notch. So we're going to stop the Grotto, then go to the Notch, hang out there, and then turn around from there.
Yep. And with that, let's take our next break.
Hey, y'all, it's Dusty and Mike with exciting news.
That's right. It's our episode finder. It's all about making finding our episodes even easier.
Want to find more episodes about hikes in Shenandoah? With over 10 episodes across two separate seasons, it would have involved a lot of scrolling and searching.
Now, with our episode finder, you can find all those episodes with a few easy clicks. That way, finding an episode on Yosemite from season one is just as easy as finding an episode on Zion, Yellowstone, and Haleakala, all in separate seasons.
With over 275 episodes in 35 different national parks, our episode finder will add ease when finding out more about hikes in these spaces.
But it's not just about hikes by national park. We've categorized our entire library so you can find hikes by state, hikes by terrain, and hikes by difficulty.
And all of our Trail Mix episodes are there too, so you can easily find our science-based episodes, interviews, and more.
Planning a trip to Colorado and want to hear more about our adventures there? Want to grunt it out on some really tricky trails or learn more about glaciers, grasslands, and mountains?
Just click the link in our show notes or on our Instagram bio, and it pops right up. You can also head directly to our website and look for the episode finder at the top of the navigation bar.
Conquer one hike in one national park, one park at a time, with just a few clicks with our episode finder. Happy trails!
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage.
Adam up.
Mm-hmm. All right. Drag king.
Math king.
Mm-hmm. I was hoping that. Mm-hmm. I was hoping it was going to be...
Not a meth king.
A math king. And I was hoping it was going to be... Well, I'm curious if it's like a math king. Is he also a reference to biblical Adam or no?
Well, Adam wasn't a king.
No.
He twern't no king.
No, he was... You know, in the Garden of Eden. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's Garden of Eden references or not.
I mean,
maybe he lip syncs to Garden of Eden by Gaga from her new album, Mayhem. Mm-hmm. But yes, a math king for sure.
I mean, he could also come out in a bodysuit that's got the fig leaf.
I wonder if it's also a bit of a matchmaking show.
And there's also a snake a la Britney Spears.
That's true. Like, I'm wondering if he pairs up audience members.
Oh, okay. So Adam Up is the host of a matchmaking show.
Exactly. Okay. Maybe he makes people make out in front of a crowd of people.
Oh, that's speaking from your own trauma.
No, there was nothing traumatic about that. That was a very joyful experience. I've done that a couple of times. It's been in a few circumstances where I've had to make out with somebody in front of... I've told this story. One was a drag bingo at Stonewall. Mm-hmm. And then one was in a...
It was your first time to Stonewall.
My first time to Stonewall, and it was an incredible experience. Mm-hmm. The drag queen was
full
like,
on gay.
Yeah, it was my first gay bar. Mm-hmm. And the drag queen was like, you're new here. I've never seen you here before. And I was like, no, it's my first time at a gay bar. And she went, look out into the crowd. Who would you like? Who do you think is cute? And I was like, well, that guy over there is cute. So she calls him up to the front and was like, are you single? Are you single? Okay, great. You're both single. Make out.
Mm-hmm.
And we did. And mm-hmm. it was great.
Mm-hmm.
It was great.
I'm paralyzed in fear right now. From that story. I'd be like, I don't find anyone single or cute.
Which is not true.
No.
But then I did get picked for like an actual live dating show at the Edinburgh Fringe. Yes. And yeah, that was another time I had to make out with somebody publicly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, I'm not like seeking that. It just ended up happening.
Mm-hmm.
So
if you ever meet Dusty, stop him on the street, Billy Eichner, and make him make out with somebody for $1.
There it is.
Mm-hmm.
No, but I think Adam Up might do that mm-hmm. because it's like adding people together.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Bit by bit. Putting it together. Yep. Okay. I like this. So if we're edging away from the Adam and Eve references, so what would Adam Up sing? If it's not going to be Garden of Eden by Gaga.
Like, is there like a You Plus Me song or like a...
There's that You Plus Me Equals Calculus.
Is that from Together? Is that mm-hmm. that band? That,
right?
Maybe that's it. Together also had like an addition sign as the T in mm-hmm, Together.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's it. Mm. That would be a fun throwback.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm into that.
Okay.
I think the merch is...
calculators
mm-hmm. yeah, something like that, or like rulers, or like you know, some fun math tools, right?
Fun math tools.
Mm-hmm.
a protractor
a compass. Make your circles perfect. Right,
like your love.
That's right.
Okay. So there's some witty things printed on each of those
math
items.
Oh, I think so for sure. Mm-hmm. I think so for sure. Mm-hmm. That's who I think Adam Up is. Adam Up is like a game show host, but in drag, and brings people together.
Great. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage, Adam Up.
So the trail continues.
It sure does.
And it becomes even like a deeper hike in the woods.
Right. I think up until this point, like once we got to Pratt Canyon, that's where sort of we started to totally lose Wash, because we had the Wash for quite some time on this trail. This is definitely like now we're just in the woods and the trail is narrow.
Right.
Yeah.
And the thing about this trail is that it's essentially incline.
Slight incline,
like from the very after that initial decline at the very beginning, like it's just slight incline the rest of the way.
Right.
Now, if we were to get to the notch, like from the grotto, from Pratt Canyon to the grotto is still that
slight incline.
From the grotto to the notch is some steeper incline.
Yeah.
And then from the notch to McKittrick Ridge is even steeper incline. So we knew that we were in for it going to the notch, and we'd already decided we were not going to McKittrick Ridge.
Yeah. Yeah.
So our slight incline begins again. Mm-hmm. And we are headed to the grotto. And then our plan is to head to the notch.
Right. That's our plan. So as we continue to hike through the woods, we finally see a turnoff for the grotto. And we head down off to the left, following what feels like a little off trail. And it leads us underneath what feels like a shallow ridge. And this had a feel of like New River Gorge for me. We'd done that hike that was in the...
I know the one you're talking about. It's the grand area of New River Gorge, Grand something. You can actually like see the bend in the river there.
Yes, the like, horseshoe bend. Yeah. Grandview.
Grandview area. Hiking down around that. It totally felt like that. It had
this underneath ridge feel. As we're hiking, it doesn't take us long. And on our right, we see this small cutout. And we approach it, and the rock is a very different color here. It's like a light sandy color. And, oh, okay, wow, this is the grotto. And it's absolutely gorgeous. And it's fascinating.
And it's got, like, drip formations in it. It's got rock. It's sort of like, it looks like a natural altar worship ceremony space that's just sort of, like, hanging out there. And it's beautiful. And it's just, like... There's no artificial lighting, but this would be something like, it's sort of like nature made like a prayer space. And I guess that's why they called it the grotto.
It's sort of like nature made a prayer space.
Is that what I sounded like?
That's what
because
I read.
Because we could go there if you need us to.
And you can walk into the space. Like, this is a space that you can get into a little bit. I took a bunch of photos from inside. You and Becky sort of took your photos, and then there were some stone tables again, which was, again, very interesting. This must have been the motif here. At McKittrick Canyon is to make everything from stone, from cabins to tables. And you sort of ended up hanging out there, and I just went back and like just played around with my phone and my actual camera and took some photos here.
This was such a cool spot, and we're so glad we didn't miss it. I've never seen something like this other than maybe in, you know, Mesa Verde. I mean, those were some intentionally created structures, but this was sort of just seemed to be entirely naturally made.
Yep.
There are some picnic tables. There's like a little picnic area here. So we decide to just sort of sit and enjoy some time at the picnic tables.
Yeah.
This is how it always happens, everybody. You sit down and, or at least with us, it's like we sit down and we go, So we're changing the itinerary because we're done now.
Yeah, I think we had like between traveling, between two longer days of hiking that previous 2 days, an early day of hiking that was pretty exhausting early. We're like, I don't think we want to go all the way to the notch. It was going to involve a lot more incline.
Like that.
Exactly. It was going to involve a lot more incline. And Becky was like, you're not going to get a view any better than you already got on Guadalupe Peak. Like, you can go to the notch, but you're going to not see anything you haven't already seen.
You're going to not see what you have already seen
from a much lower vantage point. So
we decided we're not going to the notch. We're just going to turn around.
Yeah. Which was a good choice. I think we were
very
all wiped.
Good choice.
Yeah.
So we snack a little here. We pack up our stuff and we're both like, all three of us were like, we're tired.
Yeah.
Let's turn around. And that felt like a great choice.
Yeah.
You know, it feels like a great choice when like
there's relief.
My thing is in an out and back trail, you have to traverse back through what you already did. Not that that's not going to give you a bit of a new experience. But I think it's important that you still have an enjoyable experience on the way back, too.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to, like, tire yourself out entirely.
You don't want to see the white mule.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't want to get out there and, like, be so tired and then, like, oh, God, I have 7 miles to hike back now. You know what I mean? And you're going to have a terrible time the whole way.
Exactly.
So we make the choice to turn around here, and we, like, immediately have a bounce in our step because we're like, okay, great. We've called it a day. We're heading back. It's going to be great. We have a full-out gay moment here on the trail on the way back, which I love because Becky asked us about formative TV shows and movies. And I told her that I grew up on the Rodgers and Hammerstein Cinderella, the version starring Leslie Ann Warren from 1969. And she was like, excuse me, I grew up on the Rodgers and Hammerstein Cinderella version with Leslie Ann Warren. And so then we were just singing some of the songs. We were chatting about it and how formative that was. She talked about how she had her dad would play musical theater albums like in the whole house. Like
they had an intercom system set up through the house.
Yeah, like there were speakers in every room and he would play South Pacific and, you know, all of these old musicals, and that's what they would all fall asleep to every night, which I was like, God, I love that. Also, like, forcing kids to listen to music that is from another time. I'm really into it.
Yeah.
Right. So that was really exciting.
Yeah. We talked a lot about books and movies on that way back, and also then Broadway shows. We like transferred, you know, to talking all about that and just musicals. So it was a lot of like, not that we weren't chatting the whole way out, but this was like much more buoyant conversation because it was like things that we all loved and kind of sharing those things with one another.
Agreed. Agreed. We do hike back through. We pass the Pratt cabin. We pass all the washes that we got across the river, the whatnot. And then we finally make our way back to
the incline that we now have to
do. The incline that we now have to do and climb up to get back to the bathroom area, which we do. Now you, speaking of the bathroom area, you had a situation with your own bathroom area during this time. You were like rushing to get to the restroom on the way back.
Thanks.
You're welcome. But I mean, we've all been there, but you were like, and I bring this up because Becky went to the car, you went to the restroom. I was like, I'll wait for him at the restroom. And while I was waiting, I saw this sign that I'll never forget. It's got an image of a rattlesnake on it. And it says, if you see a rattlesnake, do dot, 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 give it plenty of room as you walk around it. Don't dot, 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 throw stones, poke it with sticks, or otherwise molest it. No further commentary on that other than those were words that were chosen for a sign. I do feel like that it got the point across.
Yeah, you're not molesting snakes.
No, we should not be doing that. I felt a lot of relief getting to the end of this hike because this was like kind of like the end of 3 days for us of like
more intense hiking
that we don't do all the time. I mean, Guadalupe Peak was plenty.
Yeah.
And we went up and back in a day.
We front loaded that.
And did another hike later that day.
Yeah.
Like we did another like 6 mile loop after that.
Yeah.
You know, we did it. We've done a lot the past 3 days.
Right.
So I was really excited to just sort of like call it a day here. Even though we were doing more long hiking on the next day.
We were.
In another national park,
which
we'll get to at another place. But we ended this day going to a brewery in Carlsbad.
Which was lovely.
Wonderful.
What a great way to like spend the day. Of course, we met people from New Jersey there.
Yes, we did. Who were there on their break.
Yep.
Right? Yep. And then we also ended it by getting some pizza from our favorite pizza chain, who we won't mention here because they're not a sponsor.
But their name does rhyme with Lisa Smut.
All right, let's put this hike on the Karen Stone scale. Ultimately, we went about 6.5 miles there and back to the grotto and back. That's around what it'll take because the Pratt Cabin and the grotto are around 1 mile from each other. Mm-hmm. It's 2.5 miles to the Pratt Cabin. So we're looking at 6.5 to 7 miles there and back by the end of it. What score would you give this on the Karen Stone scale?
I'm going to say a 4. I didn't think it was a 5. It was, for the most part, relatively flat. There is a little bit of incline and decline. You are on a primarily like a slight incline the whole way up from the base of the parking lot all the way to where we headed to the grotto. If we had gone to the notch, it might be a different story, but it's a 4 for me.
I'm giving it a 3.
Oh, look at you.
Look at that. So 7 out of 20 Karen Stones for all the same reasons you mentioned, but mostly it was flat, even though it was like a little bit incline, a little bit decline sometimes.
Yeah.
So yeah. And now let's end this episode like we end all of our full length episodes with some Jeopardy style trivia. All right, Mike, why don't you get us started with your Jeopardy today?
Great. So I was inspired by the fact that we were definitely pressed for time in McKittrick Canyon. Also part of the reason that we probably didn't do the notch and attempt McKittrick Ridge because we needed to be out of there before the gate closed. So my Jeopardy for today is titled Closing Time. And this is all about, you're going to need to name the place based off of the clue that I give about its closing time.
Oh, okay. Great.
Because McKittrick Canyon had a closing time.
It did.
All right. For 100. In this northeast city, bars close at 2 a.m. Make sure if you've been drinking, you don't park your car down by the Charles.
What is Boston?
That's right. It's Boston. Great. For 200. While this Florida park may boast extra magic hours, its typical closing time is 11 p.m. soon after the fireworks.
What is specifically Magic Kingdom of Disney World?
That's correct. For 300, while this particular convenience store chain has numbers in the name denoting when it is open, the numbers are now more symbolic as many stay open 24 hours.
Is this a fitness chain?
No, convenience store chain.
Oh, what is 7-Eleven?
Correct. For 400, this remarkable landmark in South America has opening hours from 6 a.m. to 5 p.m. when the last groups may enter. Once you're in, you can stay up to 4 hours among the ruins.
What is Machu Picchu?
Correct. And finally, this airport, the world's busiest, is open 24 hours with TSA lines in some terminals open from 3:30 a.m. to 11 p.m.
Busiest airport? What is Atlanta?
That's correct. The Hartfield-Jackson Airport.
There we go. I know. I've flown through there many times. It's like I can't fly through unless... It's like I can't go to anywhere without flying through Atlanta sometimes.
The Atlanta airport. The world's your possibility.
I mean, it is. I was inspired by the name McKittrick. Mm-hmm. Here's why. There was a theater piece in New York for years, years and years and years called Sleep No More. You never saw it. Mm-mm. But I did see it. I think I saw the first night it had audience, like, because I had friends that worked on it. And so I got like invited to go. Mm-hmm. And I need to describe for you what it is. But the reason there's a connection is because it took place at the McKittrick Hotel.
Okay.
It was this old hotel building that they renovated for this site-specific performance art live theater piece. Mm-hmm. So Sleep No More was inspired by Macbeth, and then I think one other Shakespeare play. But the way it worked was you walked in and you had a mask on, so you could not see anyone's face or their facial expressions, mm-hmm. right? And you could always tell who was an artist in the show and then who was an observer, who was like an audience member, mm-hmm, right?
Thank you.
There are no chairs or seats or anything like that. You're not going in and sitting and watching anything. You are exploring a space for the 3 hours that you are participating in this. And you can go into all of these different rooms and these different things. And like knowing Macbeth, there were quite a few like iconic like moments that were recreated like from it. There was no speaking, but like there was this one room where I wandered in and there were some other people in there, and there was a woman just like laying in a bathtub in like a dress. It wasn't Ophelia, but she looked like she was seeing like a ghost or something like that. And then like I left the room and came back later, and then at another point she like got out of the tub and like stormed into another room and like confronted this man. It was all through action, and then like again no speaking, mm-hmm. and then the man left, and then he went and like he's holding a dagger wondering like what's, you know, which are all moments from Macbeth. So mm-hmm. it's all these like visually iconic moments, and it's just this stunningly beautiful like curated physical space around you, right? So that's Sleep No More. So I was inspired by the fact that this was named McKittrick Canyon. So what I did was I created a Sleep No More type experience for 5 different clues based on popular films. And you're just going to have to name the film. So it's like if...
It's referential.
It is. So if like rather than Macbeth, Sleep No More had been inspired by a film, perhaps a film between mid-1980s and now. They're all mm-hmm. films between mm-hmm. then.
Okay,
so great. Are you ready? Mm-hmm. For 100, you enter a room with a soft yellow glow coming through the windows. On the TV, Jane Fonda's Buns of Steel plays. Another wall features a poster of Hamlet starring Mel Gibson. A desk by the bed, you spot note cards with notes about an influx of immigration from Haiti. Then you spot a young woman with blonde hair, standing in the corner, staring into the closet. An endless conveyor belt of clothes rotate through the closet.
What is Clue? Clueless?
That is correct.
What is Clue?
So there you go. Mm-hmm. Okay, you get how this works. Mm-hmm. For 200, you enter a file storage room. Shelves and shelves of file boxes line the walls. You notice a young woman with a baby on her hip, standing in front of a copy machine. She eerily copies every page from a file box next to her, one at a time. Occasionally, she turns and looks over her shoulder. She looks directly at you, but doesn't see you, sees through you. The faint sound of a Sheryl Crow song plays from the radio in the corner.
I'm really quite tired. It's Aaron Brockovich.
That's right. Mm-hmm. For 300, you enter a room. It is a quaint bookstore. It's full of children's books, perfectly put together. Perfectly curated. A seemingly happy place, yet eerily empty. Then you spot in the corner a blonde woman standing over the open register. Tears fall from her cheeks into the empty cash register. Through the window, a line of people can be seen waiting to enter a bigger, larger bookstore.
What is You've Got Mail?
That is right. Mm-hmm. God, you're so good at this. Also, wouldn't these be fun?
Mm-hmm.
Sleep No More, but it's like iconic.
I love watching women cry into empty cash registers.
Well, get ready, because
really does it for me.
More women crying is coming up.
Great.
For 400, you enter a yard. Green grass stretches in every direction. Scattered through the yard are small colored objects. You look closer. Dyed Easter eggs. Then across the yard, you spot a middle-aged woman clutching a toddler in an embrace with an Easter basket. Tears gently fall from her eyes to the toddler's shoulder. Not far behind her, an angry-looking woman stands by with her leashed large dog in tow.
I can walk all the way to Texas and back, but my daughter can't.
She never could.
What is Steel Magnolias?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. You're so good at this. Wouldn't these be creepy? They'd be so creepy. I'm so here for this. This is my favorite category I've ever written. And for 500.
Also, you're like spa voice right now.
You enter a room that looks over an ocean. Bright blue water. Islands in the distance. An older woman stands next to a rocking chair, draped in a red shawl. In her hands, a wedding dress. She looks longingly toward another door in the room, perhaps leading to a bathroom, where a young woman stares at herself in the mirror. Tears stream down the older woman's face. The sounds of a Mediterranean classical guitar creep in from outside.
Oh.
If you want, I could give you the song. That might help you. That's
playing.
I want
to say Under the Tuscan Sun.
It's but, not that, no. The song has words, and there would be no words coming through. Mm-hmm. But the words of the song would be like, school bag in hand, she leaves home.
What is Mamma Mia?
Morning, correct. Mm-hmm. Good job. And there it is, the McKittrick. Hotel, but it's not Macbeth. It's other things.
Looking for more episodes like the one you just heard? Then be sure to check out our episode finder for episodes by park, state, hiking difficulty, and terrain, as well as all of our Trail Mix episodes in one helpful place. Click the link in the show notes of this episode, our Instagram bio, or visit our website to make your listening experience even easier.
This has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, and we're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
Gaze at the National Parks was created, produced, edited, and hosted by us,
Dustin Ballard
and Michael Ryan.
To see images from this episode, follow our Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks. To contact us, email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com. And to find out more about the parks visited on this show, visit our website, gazeatthenationalparks.com. That's Gaze, G-A-Z-E.
All original artwork featured on Instagram and on our website is by me, Michael Ryan.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman and Mariella Klinger, with Sean Sclios on guitar. Our music producer is Skylar Fortgang.
We would also like to acknowledge that while recording this episode, that we were on the traditional and stolen lands of the Lenape people, also known as New Jersey.